You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to a Thursday edition of Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. Thanks for listening and for subscribing. My name is Wes Goldberg, and I'm here with David Ramil, and we're recapping the Heat's 110-105 win over the Spurs on Wednesday night. The Heat took a 12-point lead into the fourth quarter, but the Spurs rallied back to get it to within three with under a minute left to play. Josh Richardson went for the mid-range dagger, but it was blocked by DeMar DeRozan. DeRozan took it down the court and was looking for the tie when Dwayne Wade, fresh off of hitting a clutch lefty floater a few possessions before, poked the ball out from behind DeRozan, and with less than 10 seconds left, Richardson recovered the loose ball. The Spurs foul. Kelly Olynyk hits a pair of free throws to give the Heat a two-possession lead. And that was it, as the Heat snapped San Antonio's nine-game win streak. David, the late-game heroics from D. Wade again. That's the lead here.
Well, I mean, you can also mention the fact that it's a season sweep of the San Antonio Spurs, which is pretty impressive. Dwayne Wade, you know, obviously no James Harden, but still a pretty good game from him tonight. You know, not contributing as much scoring as we've seen from him lately, but that defense was spectacular. Perfect timing on that. You know, obviously DeRozan wasn't expecting it at all. And Dwayne Wade, to his credit, was able to jog back on defense pretty quickly and anticipated. That was what it was as far as the dribble. He knew that DeRozan, I think he was being blocked off by Richardson as far as being able to drive directly to the lane. And he knew he'd have to cross over to go left. And Dwayne Wade anticipated that, perfect timing on being able to poke that ball free and to cause that steal there. And that was exactly what Miami needed at the time. So fantastic job from Dwayne. Great night overall for the rest of the team. You know, not to take anything away from Dwayne's heroics towards the end there, but really fantastic performances all around. Miami had, I think, an 18-point lead at one point. They were shooting very well from outside. Goron with another big game off the bench. Some top-notch level defense all across. Even Josh Richardson, who had been struggling offensively lately, had a really big bounce-back game there. Played some fantastic defense. I mean, I don't think we've been kind of harping on his lack of offense lately, the fact that he is struggling with his shooting, but he's been able to make such an incredible impact with his defense, and that was a key part of Miami's victory.
Yeah, I thought this was one of the better executed defensive games from the Heat this season. Yeah. The results ended up sort of being mixed. I mean, the Spurs ended up scoring 105 points. They shot 43% from the field. The Heat have had better outings, yeah, right? But just as far as the rotations and the executions, and the Spurs, again, nine games in a row coming into this game, they were doing it in very Spursian fashion. A lot of ball movement, hitting shots, and Miami managed, and they play like this kind of, you know, zagging offense when the rest of the NBA is zigging towards three-pointers, and they're all about the mid-range game. They only had 14 mid-range points tonight versus the Heat. I thought that, you know, LaMarcus Aldridge, he had 17 points. DeRozan had 16 points. That's below those guys' average, you know? And yeah, they've got, what was it, 34 points combined from Patty Mills and Marco Bellinelli, most of that being in the second half, but Miami got a bunch of contributions all over the place. Everybody off the bench scored in double digits. James Johnson, 13. Whiteside had 12. Dragic had 22 points. We got to talk about him. Dwayne Wade hit with his 11. And then Deion Waiters had a big game for them as a leading scorer in the starting unit with 18. So Miami just got it done the way they've been accustomed to getting things done. And they go into San Antonio, end this win streak. You mentioned they sweep the season series against San Antonio. In a game that kind of had more, I felt like, emotion tied to it. Like, there was more energy to this game. And I don't know if it started with Greg Popovich welcoming Dwayne Wade with this gift basket of signed jerseys and stuff, and a terrific tribute video that the Spurs put together for him. But this game had just more intensity to it.
I think it's the past rivalries there. I mean, the fact that Wade has been such a part of the Heat organization that, you know, and especially during those two championship runs there, one in 13 that led to a Heat title and one in 14 that led to a Spurs title. But Wade's been such a big part of it. And I think that recognition that this is the last time there certainly played a part in it. Miami.
Wait, I forgot to say this because you were talking about that poking behind DeMar DeRozan and kind of going into it. Reminded me of when Dwayne Wade stole the ball from Derrick Rose and won the game on a floater. Do you remember that?
A while ago, yeah.
Against the Bulls. I don't know if Dwayne Wade just, like, he's so good at, like, these weird little things that you don't really, like, he's this great off-ball cutter. Nobody ever talks about off-ball cutting. He's a great shot blocker for being a guard. Nobody, asks guards to block shots, you know? He's, like, that's what makes him the Hall of Fame player that he is just all this extra stuff on top of the scoring right. That he does. And I wonder if he's just got, like, this weird innate thing of being able to steal the ball on the move, you know? Like, because it was similar to the Derrick Rose steal where this DeMar DeRozan, like, he was in front of Derrick Rose for that one, and he was sort of behind off to the side of DeMar DeRozan for this mm-hmm. one. But he just has, like, this weird ability to just get these clean, just poking the ball clean while this guy is on the move towards the rim in sort of these late-game situations. I don't know if that's a skill or not, but Dwayne Wade's
done it. Absolutely is. I mean, look, I think it's partly due to a 6'11 reach on his part. I mean, that's that's why he's such a great shot blocker.
Great call.
But he's got fantastic timing. And the off-ball cutting, we talked about it a number of times, obviously one of his best skills. And I think it really showed, I think for me, when he wasn't the lead ball handler and wasn't necessarily the lead scorer during the Big Three era, that kind of became a highlight of his being able to have the old man game because he was able to just move around without the ball and find himself open under the basket. But at the same time, he's always had a high basketball IQ and an innate understanding of where to be on the floor, and it certainly showed on defense. And I think that timing, look, the focus on Dwayne Wade has been throughout his career on his incredible athleticism, but as that's waned throughout the course of his career, I think we're starting to see more and more of these, you know, slower plays, but his timing being as good as ever. And I think that's a big part of tonight's win.
We'll take some of your Twitter questions after this break. Chris Bosh's jersey will go into the rafters in Miami on Tuesday, March 26th. And to celebrate, we here at Locked On Heat are dedicating the entire week to the most interesting member of the Big Three Heat. We'll have some great shows for you as we relive one of the most epic eras in NBA history through the lens of its most underappreciated player. We'll have some of your favorite guests on the show, a recap of the jersey retirement ceremony, a special Chris Bosh-themed mailbag, and a few surprises along the way. So tune in to Locked On Heat, or should I say, Locked On Bosh, all of next week. Subscribe to Locked On Heat on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and Himalaya. Let's go to Twitter to answer some of the questions that you sent in using the hashtag AskLOHeat. This one comes from Kevin, who writes in, how good can Bam be, a 20 points per game scorer? David, Bam didn't score a whole lot of points tonight, only 6 points on 3 of 4 shots. Yeah. Had 15 rebounds, had 5 assists and 2 steals in the game. We could talk about Bam's offense, but I kind of want to talk about his defense first. Because I thought it was incredible tonight. And I tweeted during the game, he is the closest thing that the Heat have at the five to Chris Bosh since Bosh retired.
Absolutely.
Like, he is doing that thing where he traps high on pick and rolls, he hedges out far out, and then darts back to the rim in time to make up for all the rotations. He's really in his comfort zone.
Yeah,
right now.
Clearly we've been doing this show for too long because I'm right up there. Because, I mean, that was something that I wanted to yell as I was watching this game. He unlocks Miami's defense so completely, which is why Miami's playing at such a high level ever since they inserted him into the starting lineup, because he makes so much more possible because he can hedge off the perimeter there and then all of a sudden drip back and drop back and cover at the rim as well. And he has the incredible athleticism where he can, you know, protect the rim if they get a shot attempt. He can corral a rebound if need be. So, I mean, there are so many things that he allows everybody else to do. He makes up for so many more weaknesses. Whereas, you know, Hassan is somewhat limited in what he can do defensively, even though he makes a great impact in that sense. Bam just takes it to a whole other level. And I think for Miami's defense, particularly with that starting unit, it's so much more efficient because of Bam's ability to guard multiple players, where somebody can, you know, he goes in that double team and then somebody rotates and covers for somebody else. And it puts the pressure on ball handlers where they have to make a bad pass, which leads to turnovers and things of that sort. Look, San Antonio only with 8 turnovers, still a pretty good game for them, but they don't turn the ball over much anyway. But still, Miami was able to force them into bad shots. I was surprised that, you know, they average 88 field goal attempts per game. And that's the number of attempts that they actually had tonight against Miami. But at the same time, it just seemed like they were often rushed. And maybe, I know that's the San Antonio system.
It felt like they had to work harder for all of them. Like, they got all the same, they got as many shots. They just had to work really hard for it. Bam was a big, Bam just being that second guy on the trap, I think just creates so much stress for an offense. And it's not like, okay, well, now he's the second guy on the trap. If you're a guard, you naturally look, okay, well, there's 2 guys in front of me. Who's the open guy? Well, as soon as you pass it for that in that trap, if you're a guard, you try to get it to your closest guy, who then will kind of continue on that hockey assist and try to find the open guy. But because Bam is so fast in his rotation, that open guy never sort of materializes. Yep. Like, there's never that opening, and that's what we saw so much from Bosch. And then I thought Bam's defense, just man-to-man against LaMarcus Aldridge, especially late in the game, was really good. Aldridge did make one nice shot at the end of the game, but Bam stood his ground. He doesn't bite on pump fakes like another Heat center does way too often. Just stands his ground, keeps his arms up. Just he's like, all right, I'm going to challenge this. Like, you might make it. I'm not going to try to swat everything, but I'm just going to make everything as hard as possible for you. He's like playing the percentages that way. But in regards to Whiteside, too, he's playing really well off the bench. Like, I don't mean to disparage him. 12 points on 6 shots, made all 6 of his free throws, had 7 rebounds, a couple of assists tonight, put a block on the board. Like, we saw David, I don't know, 2-3 years ago, I guess, kind of this genesis of points and rebounds backup centers. Like, okay, this is what we're going to do with the dinosaur centers. We're going to bring them off the bench so that they can destroy bench units, right? The Greg Monroes, the Enes Kanters of the world. But those guys ended up still kind of falling out of the league. But I do wonder if Whiteside is so much better than any of those guys defensively. Right. I wonder if he could sort of survive in that way where, okay, now he comes off the bench. Yeah, Bam, because so many other starting units are running like these three-point heavy offenses, ball movement heavy offenses, it makes more sense to have Bam because of what he can do defensively. But you could still bring Whiteside off the bench and let him dominate that way when he doesn't have to go against those type of offenses all the time.
Yeah, that's a good point. Maybe we should address the question, though, just to get back to what Kevin asked. As far as what Bam's ceiling is, I don't envision him as a 20-point-per-game scorer. I think not until such time as he develops a more consistent perimeter shot. I think he's got a good stroke. We've seen it more and more throughout the course of the season, but I don't think I trust him from three-point range at all. I don't think he trusts himself either. I think that'll eventually be there. But for now, I think he could be a solid 15-point-per-game scorer, probably averaging close to 12, 13 rebounds per game, and probably upwards of like 4 or 5 assists per game, just because he does so much. They continue to run the offense through him. He gets the ball in the high post. He's a good passer. He had that really nice pass to, I think, a cutting Kelly Olynyk under the basket there. He had I think he had one to Josh Richardson too, didn't he, where he finished for a dunk. It's just really, really smart playing from him, and I think that's probably his ceiling. That's where he's best. I don't think he forces anything, and that's incredible maturity for a 21-year-old.
He's got a great feel for the game, and that's been more and more so on display the more and more he plays with the starting unit. How good can Bam be? Really good. A 20-point-per-game score? No, I don't think so. And I'll even go lower than your 15. I think 10 is right where you probably want him. I kind of view him as, like, I know Justice Winslow is supposed to be Draymond Green, but I think Bam more fits that mold where he doesn't need the ball to be effective. Like, he's a really good passer. He's got great timing on that. Like, maybe eventually he starts to develop that outside shot so that defenses respect him more a little bit. Like, can he be a 30% guy on, like, 1.5, 2, 3-point attempts per game? Maybe. Like, I don't see why not. But he's a great ball handler. He can take a rebound and go the other way with it. And I would like to just see him run more offense, if anything. Like, if the Heat get shooters around him, can he sort of do what Draymond does and just stand in the high post or in that triple threat position, have guys run these split cuts off the ball and just, like, just find the open guy? Like, I think he could do that. He's already doing it under the basket. Like you said, he's finding open cutters underneath the basket. Once Miami gets more shooters, eventually you would assume that would happen. Mm-hmm. He could start doing that onto the perimeter. I think it's awesome. He could be sort of a linchpin of the offense without actually having to score a whole bunch of points.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And I mean, listen, we talk so much about why they drafted him, and it seemed like a perplexing move at the time, but it's really paid off just having that kind of versatility and depth there, especially in today's league. And his defense has been, I think, such a key part of him making an overall positive impact. It's been great to watch. And we had that question in a recent show about comparing him to John Collins, and I still think that Bam is a better overall player even at this stage, even if Collins is putting up bigger, gaudier numbers because he's having more opportunity in Atlanta. So I'm comfortable with where he was selected and where his progress is right now, and I think he's going to continue to get better the more minutes he gets. I'm excited to see what happens in the playoffs, because I don't think we really saw him unlocked in the playoffs last year, despite the struggles that Hassan Whiteside had. So I'm curious to see how Bam responds to the pressure if the Heat make the playoffs.
I agree, and I think he could end up being a steal at 14. Our stat of the game is next. It's time for our stat of the game.
Take that for data.
David, what do you got?
Well, 6 is the stat of the game. It's the difference in fast break points, 16 to 10. In a 5-point game, obviously, that was the difference for Miami. Not a lot of fast break opportunities there, but they capitalized on the ones they had, and a great overall performance from Miami as far as the fast break is concerned.
Yeah, I think, you know, you look at a game that came down to the wire here. You look across the board. Okay, the Heat, 46.5% field goal percentage. The Spurs, 43.2%.
Which is down from their average. They normally average 48% from the field, so I think that was a big part of what you were saying as far as them having to work harder. That really shows in their field goal percentage.
On the three-pointers, Miami made 16 of 35. San Antonio made 14 of 34. Turnovers, Miami had 10. San Antonio had 8. Like, even rebounds. Like, San Antonio had 46. Miami had 48. Across the board, like, it's just a really close game, and I'm just, you know, I'm glad you point out the fast break points, because you look around and you're like, all right, well, what was the difference here? Like, Miami had 44 points in the paint. San Antonio had 34, but they also had 10 more mid-range points than the Heat did. So it makes up for that in that way, right? Below the arc. So the difference was Miami got, like you said, Miami's defense made things more difficult for San Antonio, and they got 6 more points, really easy points in the fast break. Versus what San Antonio got. And that ended up, like, those easy points ended up being the game changer. I think those 6 fast break points and then Dwayne Wade's half court shot at into halftime ended up being really important. So, yeah, I think that was literally the stat of the game. That was literally the difference of the game.
Did you have, to kind of shy away from the stat aspect here, did you have any problems with Derrick Jones' game? Because he finished 1 of 7 from the floor, a plus 15 as far as his plus minus is concerned, finished with just 5 points, collected of 1 of his 4 three-point attempts. Not a great game from him in 32 minutes, but defensively, yeah. I think he played a really solid game. He made things difficult for DeRozan when he was on him. For Rudy Gay, there were a number of times there where he kind of shut down to him. And I wonder, do you have any concerns about his offense?
I thought the I know he took 4 three-pointers, but I thought the Spurs specifically tried to funnel the threes towards Derrick Jones Jr. I think that was the game plan from the outset.
Okay.
They kind of shut down everything else. Derrick Jones Jr. ended up having a couple of wide-open corner threes. They ended up leaving him wide open for a straightaway three, I think, pretty early in the game, and he missed that. And I was like, no, dude, take him. I'm glad you're taking him. Like, you got to make him. So I didn't have a problem with it. He ended up having the second highest plus-minus on the team, despite going 1 of 7 from the field. So defensively, he was really good. I think he took the right shots. Like, he didn't try to force anything. He took the shots that were there, and you can't really complain about that. So I actually thought he had a good game. I liked what I saw, despite him missing the shots. You like to see him take the shots.
Yeah. We should probably talk a little bit about Goran Dragic with another incredible game off the bench. 22 points on 8 of 13 shooting, 4 of 7 from three-point range. That first half in particular, though, he was electric. I mean, he just wasn't taking any time at all to hoist that shot, and it's silky smooth. At this point, like, he's barely moving the net when he shoots those. He's dialed in a way that I don't think any of us expected him to be. And he's making such a huge impact. I don't know if it's sustainable. I think he's healthy. I think he's happy. I think we should also point out something you sent to me via text earlier, the article from Shandell Richardson over at The Athletic, kind of echoing a lot of what we've been talking about on the show as far as where Goran is personally, because he does talk about, you know, in his interview with Shandell, he talks about how happy he is in South Florida, that he's happy with his children and his wife and that they're comfortable here. And that, yes, the goal is and remains for him to win a title in the NBA, but that he's happy with his role in Miami. He's happy being part of this organization. He spoke glowingly about the Heat. And I wonder, you know, there's a big question there as far as what he'll do this offseason, whether or not he'll opt out. We expect that he won't, that this is his best opportunity to continue to collect that money. And it's deserved because I think he's still playing at a high level, even if it's a little higher than I think a lot of people perceive his value to be. But he's played a great game and he's making a real positive impact. Do you have any issues? Do you think that Goran is going to be able to perform at such a high level for the rest of the season? I mean, whether Miami makes the playoffs or not?
He looks fresher than he has the entire year. So I actually do think he'll be able to keep doing this. And, like, he only played 22 minutes tonight. Deion played 33. And that might be the key here. It's like, Dragic might be more valuable in those 20 minutes, while Waiters is more valuable getting like a few more minutes because he kind of needs that warm-up period.
Yeah.
And so I don't have an issue with it. I don't know what what this is going to look like next year. I don't know if either of these guys will be on the team next year. But for now, like you point that, what stands out to me in that Shandell Richardson article is that not only is he happy, but he's just comfortable. And when you're comfortable and you feel like you're safe and comfortable in your role in your workplace, then you can perform better. And that seems to be what's happening here. So he's playing great. And look, we can go on and on about what happens next year, but we have mailbags and we've talked about it 100 times, but he's playing great. And I don't see a reason to switch things up at this point.
Good point.
You can connect with us on Twitter at LockedOnHeat or email us at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. Make sure to subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform, including Spotify. Rate, review, and say nice things about us. Check out the Patreon page for exclusive content that helps support the show. And we now have a partnership with the podcast app Himalaya. So go ahead and download that really cool, intuitive podcast platform that you can find all of our shows on. Thank you for spending some time with us today. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.